Welcome to Coaching Uncaged, the podcast that pushes the boundaries of the coaching profession with cutting-edge practitioners, authors, and thought leaders. Coaching Uncaged brings you pioneering thinking to enrich the art and science of coaching in all its forms. And now, introducing your host, Robert Stevenson.
Hi, and welcome everybody to another Animus Conversation with me, Robert Stevenson. Today, I'm joined with Julia Vaughan Smith as we explore how trauma is sort of making its emergence into the coaching space and explore how that might show up and what we might do with that as coaches. But before I get going, let me allow Julia to introduce herself.
Oh, hi. Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us this evening. Thank you, Robert, for setting this up. It's great. I'm a psychotherapist and executive coach and been working in the trauma field for about the last 10 years. And my book, Coaching and Trauma, was out last year. So I've been teaching and writing about trauma in the coaching field for some years. And I'm pleased to be here.
Brilliant. Thank you. So I just want to give a little bit of background to us sort of agreeing to have this conversation. Right now we're in this sort of pandemic and I've got my usual coaching practice still running, and I was just becoming more and more aware that what's happening right now is showing up in the coaching space. And as I sort of read the news and watched the news and listened to the news, it made me think about how are people being affected by this? What's it triggering for people? And how those things might be showing up in the coaching space and where we as coaches may or may not be equipped to deal with that. So I thought, who better to talk to about this than Julia, and just to get a sense of your thoughts and sort of thinking around what's going on right now and how might that emerge into the coaching space. But before we sort of dive into the mix of that, I guess something that might be really useful for people is for you, Julia, just to share your thoughts about the divide or the spaces where we might use coaching or we might use therapy.
It's such a tricky question because there's such a broad field of coaching and such a broad field of therapy. But I think one of the things, I think to answer the question for ourselves, we have to have an understanding about trauma. And if we don't really understand trauma, then we're not in a position to be able to answer that question for ourselves very easily, which is why I've been talking a lot in the last recent years about trauma-informed coaching. So I'm not aiming to get coaches to be quasi-therapists, but to be trauma-informed in their work, so they're better able to be very sensitive to the boundaries and what's going on, and to be more self-reflective and understanding about their part, since we're all traumatized. So it's within that area. So to hone it down a bit, I know that's a bit airy-fairy. If we assume on that most of us carry a trauma, we are trauma being a lasting impact on the neurophysiology. So it's our earliest reptilian system that senses danger. So it's about safety and danger. And if that was triggered early in their life, then it is very susceptible to being triggered throughout our life to a greater or lesser extent. So if we understand that, then we also have to understand that we develop a whole range of defensive strategies so that we can create an illusion of safety around ourselves, because the fear of being unsafe is so great. So those survival strategies, things like being very controlling, very avoidant, addictions, work addictions, all those sort of things, whole range of survival strategies. And in coaching, what we meet is often those survival strategies. We meet them in ourselves when we're rushing to rescue clients. We meet them in clients when the work isn't progressing and we can't really work out why, or we end up coaching, colluding with this survival strategy. So if we're trauma-informed, we're able to check in on ourselves about, am I getting entangled here with this defense strategy of the client? And if we can do that, we can prevent ourselves becoming entangled and therefore making it not worse, but actually not helping, not being a good coach. There are also clients who are showing signs of trauma stress, traumatic stress, hypervigilant, hyper-aroused, sweat, re-traumatized. As coaches, we can, if that presents in the room, we need to be able to know how to sit with that and help people get their breathing back if we can, help them do that. And it's not our job, in my view, to then dig into what's going on with that trauma stress. But it is our job to be able to be with it in the session that it's present at, and to help our clients think through what would be helpful for them in terms of managing this long term. So this isn't something that just flares up, something they'll be familiar with. And then there are other clients who may, for the first time, because we've created a safe space for them, feel safe enough to talk about earliest experience, for example, sexual abuse as children, that they've never told anybody about before. As coaches, we need to be able to sit with that and hear that, not close them down, not rescue them, but also not then to step in and do work with that early trauma. That's not the role of coaches. So that's how I see broadly different categories. But of course, you know, it is where we need supervision.
Yeah, absolutely.
And be clear about our boundaries. If we're not clear about our boundaries as coaching, what coaching is, what we're there for, what our competence is, we get tempted to lessen those boundaries because of our own survival strategies, and we're not using supervision, then we haven't got a learning space.
It was one of the key questions that people were sharing when I posted this in our community group around, you know, coaches having supervision that allow them to reflect on what might be showing up in the space to then be able to identify, is there something going on here that sits outside of my competency that I need support in dealing with, or I need to work with the client to find out how they might seek other support to deal with this. And it's, I guess there is a concern that sometimes coaches are practicing and rescuing and not having supervision, and therefore not noticing the challenges that they're facing.
I think that is a risk. I think if coaches aren't aware of how some of their own trauma is impacting on them, about how they're, you know, we don't have to do a historical dig, because I'm not saying we have to know everything that's happened to us, because often it's unconscious anyway, but have to see what our defensive strategies are. When we feel vulnerable and unsafe, where do we go to? And one of the common ones in helping professions is we go to rescuer.
Yeah.
We either go to rescuer or we go to controller.
Yeah.
Or sometimes we go to, oh, nothing to me, I'm going to distance myself from that. But rescuing is a predominant one.
Yeah.
And as soon as you step into the rescuer, you are entangled. So your trauma system is entangled with the client's trauma system. And no coaching can happen.
One of the things I often notice when I'm doing supervision is that somebody is entangled. They're in the story with the client. They haven't stepped back and gone, what's going on here? What's at play here? They're in it and they're wrestling with it, colluding with it. And that can be, you know, very challenging for a coach, especially when they don't recognize that that's what's at play.
Yes. And I think it's something, again, you know, when people have racked up a lot of coaching hours, coaching experience, that tends to happen, can still happen. But I think when coaches are quite new in the profession, new in their skills, then I think the anxiety is great anyway. Am I getting this right? Am I doing this right? You know, am I good enough? And all those sort of things play in, you know, especially if there's a childhood history of being told you're not good enough or feeling you're not good enough, then that plays in. So, you know, we are the there and then. Is constantly playing out in the here and now.
Yeah.
In us as coaches. So first place to start is always with ourselves.
And I think, you know, one of the things that we explore a lot at Animus is that self-reflection to explore what's going on for you, what's coming up for you as the coach, as you practice with your clients or your colleagues, to have a sense of where are you being triggered. I think that's a really key thing for me, is, you know, what clients' issues or challenges trigger me, and then what I might need to go and look at in order to go, what's that about that's coming up for me?
Because I think if we're able to do that and we're able to stay in our resourced, self-regulated state, so if we're able self-regulated, so, you know, our stress hormone responses are sort of pretty ticking along, we're not agitated, we're not stimulated in any way by anxiety, then we're able to be fully present with the client. So whatever they bring, we can stay present and we can stay coaching. But as soon as we tip out of being self-regulated, our capacity to be present goes, our capacity to be in good connection with our body goes. And then we can well get dabbling into areas of trauma, which actually are not within our areas of competence.
Yeah, and there was something you said there about, you know, regulating ourselves and therefore knowing what a regulated self feels like, and that kind of just checking in, you know, when I'm okay in the world, how do I feel? What's that like? So that when I'm not okay, I can begin to notice this.
That's right. And your body is the instrument.
Yeah. And I think a lot of new coaches are caught in the, am I getting this right? Or I want to get this right. Yeah. And that can throw us out of that regulated self. So it can then be difficult to notice if we're regulated or not, because we're so anxious around the other things that are at play.
Well, let's be honest, if those of us who've trained in anything, I've trained in lots of things, you know, unconscious competence or conscious incompetence is the worst bit of learning. The most disturbing bit of learning, that you're conscious that you actually haven't got all the skill set that you need. It's a very uncomfortable place to be, and stimulates all sorts of early memory. Of criticism and getting it wrong and all those sort of things.
It sort of makes me think about how, I guess this is slightly off topic, but I'll kind of drag us back on in a moment, but it makes me think about how do we, I guess, create a safe environment for ourselves as practitioners to feel okay, and then in order for us to practice.
Well, I expect everyone listening would have, you know, lots of thoughts about that as well. So I think it is, some of it is environment. So, you know, how can we create a safe environment for our clients? And the thing about working with if there's trauma around, is boundaries are really important. So the environment also means our relational environment with the client and any other systems around the client.
Yeah.
So there is something about being mindful about that, I think. And I think it is about having practices, if you like, body reflective practices, which we can use before we're with clients and in between clients, so that we're able to keep that self-regulated place. Just, I think, we can track ourselves. We would all know, if you reflected on your client work, you would know the times you felt unsafe, and you're able to then think about, well, what was going on? Some of it might have been about the client, but some of it might have been about the setting, might have been about the timing. It might have been often about the contracting, if the contracting hasn't been set up properly or it's a bit weak. You know, it's those sort of things that are really important in creating a safe space.
Yeah, and that sort of makes me think about, you know, how important it is to spend time contracting so that we both know, both parties are really aware of what it is that we're here to do. Absolutely. And how are we going to do this, and what are the boundaries around this work. And the clearer we can be with that, I think the easier it is to then notice when we're slipping outside of that.
I think it's essential for clients to feel safe. Often, as you and others who've been supervising, often when, you know, coaches might bring things to you, say, well, what was the contract? You know, how did you contract? And you realise that because there was some anxiety built in at the beginning, the contracting had been sort of skipped over, or somehow other people had influenced it and it didn't feel quite right or something. It's a very important boundary to the work. And it also enables the client to be a willing signer upper to watch how you're proposing to work for them. You know, is this going to work? Is that okay? What, you know, otherwise we can be ambushing them.
And I think there's something really interesting you said there about, you know, that we're okay with our contracts. And often people will go and shelf pick contracts and go, oh, I'll use this contract. Mm. Without going, what does this contract mean for me? And what do I want this to say? And you know, sometimes we talk about when creating our contracts, looking at what are our red flags. And so how do we bring those as part of that setting up? And I think especially right now, during a space of lots of going on, I think there's a really importance to be really clear about what are we here to do and how are we going to do this.
Absolutely, I think that's right. And I think, you know, at this point in at this time that we're all living through, you know, people often need a bit more time than they might at other times to actually be with themselves in this safe space we're created, because most of us, our lives have been disrupted to a greater or less extent. Some people to a great extent, others, to some extent, it's still been disruptive, but it has an impact on all of us. So there is a bit more space about just, oh God, can I just be with myself for a moment in this space? And for us to be able to hold that and help them hold their vulnerability in this time.
And that's the word vulnerability really kind of triggered me into the original thinking around this, as you know, COVID-19, how is that showing up in the coaching spaces, and how might we manage stuff that starts to rise to the surface that perhaps as coaches we're not used to seeing kind of bubbling through?
I think the first thing is to just check in with ourselves about, is this do we carry anxiety about being overwhelmed? And that could be that part of us is already feeling overwhelmed. You know, that so part of us, you know, think of us in parts, so not all of us is, but maybe part of us is. So if there's a concern, how will I cope? What will I do? You know, that could well be sitting about a fear of being overwhelmed. And so something about, you know, what parts of me does that connect to? What's, if anything, can I do to reassure that part or to help it see things a bit differently? Because, of course, we get into all sorts of thinking habits as well. And those can be examined and changed in all sorts of ways, as we know. So I think that's one aspect. So I think that it really comes back to preparing for ourselves. You know, if we can be present, and we can stay within our coaching boundaries, then if all we do, and I say all we do lightly, is to sit, listen attentively, be witnessing, be acknowledging, have connection with the client, good job. Job done in some ways, you know, in this case. If we can't do that, then we're grasping for all sorts of other tools and techniques that we think might help us at this time.
And that's
so would be my initial answer to your question.
Yeah, and that's something that's really interesting, because, you know, I often hear new coaches talking about what tool, what technique, what thing should I do, how should I do it? And sometimes I sort of say, you know, just pull back and be there. Don't think that you need to fix it with a mechanism. Allow it to emerge, and then, you know, reflect upon it and explore where does the client want to take this, and what do they want to do with this? But that being part of our overwhelm is really interesting, especially now when we might be overwhelmed by other things and not actually noticing how that's showing up for us.
No, that's right. I think, you know, I agree with you, this sort of, this being able to be present, this being with ourselves, self-regulated. But if we have an anxiety, but, you know, we have to look in ourselves, and it's quite likely that parts of us feel overwhelmed at times, all the time, some of the time, you know, or maybe for some, not at all. But I think it's there. I think it is true that I think some of the coaching space might feel more intensive.
Yeah.
And I think those, of course, are all working online, and, you know, that's not a great, you know, some people are very skilled at it, they've used it a lot. For other people, they don't use it so much. So we're also learning how to use this virtual space well, how to connect with people across this virtual space in a way that is congruent to how we want to work. So I think there's also issues about how we set that up for ourselves, what helps us as coaches do that, because it is more tiring.
Yeah, there was, as you were saying that, I sort of went, I'd never thought about when you make the switch, as some of us would have done, from face-to-face to virtual coaching, to actually have a conversation about, so how are we noticing this being different? Mm. And what does that mean for us? And so how do we, as collaborators, explore this? Mm. And it suddenly made me go, okay, there's something to think about and explore. Similarly to, you know, if we change our practice space with a client midway through a season of sessions, we might explore with them, how is this sitting for them?
Yeah. And of course, people's responses will be different. Mm. You know, some people might welcome the slighter distance.
Yeah.
And other people will feel the slighter distance more acutely. So we can't assume how everyone respond, but I think what we do know is that we are creating a different space of connection.
Yep.
And so it's, how do we make that, how can we maintain the connectivity through this new vehicle, or new for some of us, not for all, I know. Yeah. And a lot we can learn from people who've used it a lot and have got a lot of experience about how to make this really the best space of meeting that we can.
I guess there's something just sort of popped into my head, that I know if I was face-to-face with a client who was having a stress reaction, that I'd feel very competent in my skill of exploring that, of creating a sense of regulation, of getting in touch with the breathing and the here and now with them. But I've never had that experience in the virtual space. So I'm sort of going, I'm not quite sure how I would explore that. I'm imagining it would be very much the same, but I'm just curious around your thoughts on that.
Well, I think it would be the same. I mean, it would be the same and not the same.
Yes.
So your responses would feel the same. If you're connected with your client, you would be picking up the same visual clues. You know, you might be less able to see quite what's happening to their breathing in the quite the same way, but you'd have a sense that there's something dysregulated going on. And you would pull them, you'd seek to pull them into contact with you in the way you would one-to-one. But of course, also, it depends in what environment clients are sitting talking to us from.
Yeah.
And how safe that feels as well. So I think there is something about being able to explore, are they, you know, if people are working from home and they've got everybody around them, are they in a space where actually they can feel safe?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
And how can that be made to work? And to recognise that that does vary depending on people's living arrangements.
Of course, if you're in the space and there are people in that space that are part of your challenge, it's going to be very challenging to talk about them, because they may overhear and all of that. Whereas, which is really interesting about how we manage our spaces and support our clients to manage their spaces during this.
And the boundaries, you know, I think I've heard lots of people talk at the beginning of all of this. I think it's settled down a bit, people have learned. But people are on Zoom the whole time, and people were knocking on the door the whole time, as it were, through Zoom. And people were overwhelmed because they hadn't set up proper boundaries to this. And obviously, if people want to have a please people driver, then, you know, being available to people all the time is the same as if you're in an office, but just you've learned how to do it differently. So I think there are those things to be mindful of. And I think it's perfectly possible to have a very good connected coaching conversation online. Of course it is. But I think if people are dysregulated, you do the same things. You're trying to get them in contact with you, talk about breathing. You can still take them through breathing exercises in just the same way. And then, you know, say, and who else is around you that can help you with this, for example? And take it just the way you would a coaching conversation. But if we're out of connection with ourselves, we're not able to do that.
And that just kind of really emphasizes that necessity to know oneself and to understand oneself and to be aware of what's going on, and to take the time before our coaching to settle into where we need to be in order to show up as our best with our clients. And so I start to think about how or what we might notice in the coaching space now, with the challenges that are at play. And I know we're kind of going to sort of guess and make some assumptions here about what might we start to notice kind of coming into the space, or the tensions or the anxieties that as coaches we should just be looking out for as perhaps being indicators of something more at play.
Well, I'm tempted to ask you, what have you noticed? What have you noticed?
Yeah, so one of the things I think I've noticed is, for some of my clients, there's this real sense of weight. There's a heaviness about, so, you know, when will this be over and what will that mean? And will I be okay after this? And I guess also a weight of, you know, if they're the breadwinner in the family, what does that mean? Or, you know, will their job be there when they come back? And also the anxiety, one of the other anxieties that I've noticed that sort of cropped up in the coaching that I do, is that whole social distancing and how disconnecting from people around them has created this sense of lostness.
Yes, I recognise all of that, as you say, and I think that is what's happening. I mean, obviously, you know, there's a major disruption to people's lives. And for some people, that has affected their whole job identity and their whole work identity. For others, not so much. It depends. But everything has been thrown up in the air. And so the habits that we had established around work have mostly all been completely thrown up in the air. So the habits that just held us in place, how we go to work, how we do our work, how we do that, how we relate to the family, how we earn the money, how we pay the mortgage, all those things for many just been thrown up in the air. So we're now being required to establish quite quickly new habits. And a lot of the, and over time, those new habits, some of them will settle in, but other ones will start to rub. And it's that rub, which I actually don't like this new habit. You know, some new habits, oh, this is actually quite a nice new habit. Yeah, I might keep that. But for others, I don't really like this new habit. I don't like being separated from my friends. I don't like that disconnect. Yeah. It doesn't feel good for me. And then we're all subjected to our thought habits about how we interpret what's happening. So the narratives we tell ourselves. And, you know, I say this as if I don't do this, but if we worry about the future, we can't solve the future. We can only be in the present. We can't solve the future problems now. We can just say, well, how can we prepare? What could I do today?
Yeah.
It would take me somewhere, which might help me take me where I want to go in the future. So we can, you know, we can do that. So I think there is something that we can also just be watching out for how people's thought habits, which of course connect to their past experience of not being wanted, not being loved, not being protected. And all these things can get very stimulated for some people in this lockdown, depending on the situations they're facing, depending on whether they're alone, whether they're in a family that actually isn't a good family to be part of. These things can also bring earlier traumas to the fore. Yeah. So some people are re-traumatized by that. And of course, I don't know if anybody come up in coaching. It's because it's affecting older people. We probably haven't yet. But, you know, those people who have been in ICU, very small proportion of the population, but those have lasting psychological impact from that experience. So they do have traumatic stress.
Yeah.
Traumatic experience. So, you know, they might come into the field, but it's a very small minority. For most people, it's either stimulation of worry and anxiety that's projected onto the uncertainty, and that's carried with life narrative often. You know, it's not safe, I won't be, you know, I'll be destitute, I won't earn any money. That's a life narrative. There's not often evidence for it. Or they are people, again, a minority, who are re-traumatize because the isolation, it reminds them so much of earlier isolation that they are having a traumatizing response in their neurophysiology.
Yeah, wow. So it's really interesting. So there could be a lot going on that's underneath that surface that's coming into the coaching space. And as coaches, it's to just pay attention to what that might be and to notice that without getting our pickaxe out and go mining for it. And I know that we can get over curious as coaches and kind of scrabble away to unearth what's there, and in a way that can, I guess, be leading or even crossing our boundaries with our clients. And I guess that mindfulness to stay present with what's presenting itself, to stay curious, of course, because without curiosity, there are no questions, but to stay curious but present to what's taking place in the now.
Yes, I think that's really important. And I think there probably is quite a lot going on. And sometimes just the space that we can give for clients, confidential space, allows them to get in a better regulated space. And if they can get better regulated, they can do better thinking. Mm. You know, our thought habits become become negative when we're out of regulation, when we're anxious. We start, you know, going off onto the thought habits, which aren't helpful because they make us suffer more. So we can also help people to if they're in a more regulated state, they can see that for them. They're able to see that for themselves. If they're not in a regulated state, it doesn't help us telling them about their thought habits.
Yeah, so you know that, but I guess that's part of classic coaching to enable the client to reflect upon what's happening and to enable them to be in the space with you to notice what's taking place and to bring them back into that. When our clients step away and get caught up in something up here or down here, to kind of go, okay, so where are you? And exploring how that space is helping or hindering your ability to explore what you want to explore.
Because I think the context has changed around us, but actually the coaching process should be exactly the same. There's no reason for us to adopt any different coaching process than we've used before. Context might change a bit, of course, and some clients might be presenting that more intensely than others, but the coaching practice and coaching process remains the same. But of course, we might be more triggered. We are carrying our own parts who are worried, our own parts who are anxious, our own parts that feel overwhelmed or whatever. So it is more possible for us to be carrying those with us in the coaching. So I think it's an opportunity for us to create enough space for us to do the self-reflective practice and just get back in contact with ourselves and check in with ourselves. And I think also with clients, you know, working with this idea of parts is really helpful. So if people say, oh, I feel so overwhelmed. So, okay, so let's think about that part of you that feels overwhelmed. And is there a part of you that doesn't feel so overwhelmed? Maybe, or there may not be, but it gives the opportunity that we're not all one experience. We have other resources available to us. Sometimes they get blown out of the water, I know. But if we provide a sort of safe space, clients can often reaccess those, unless they are re-traumatized, in which case we can listen and sit with them and then ask them what help they would really need.
And I think there's something courageous here for coaches to really step into the space of, if something is happening in the space and you're going, this isn't within my competency, to actually say to the client, you know, so what help would you need to explore this? As opposed to falling into my clients in a struggle here, how do I help them?
Absolutely. No, I'd agree with you. Absolutely. And I think that's why, you know, from coaching, we can make a contribution to people who are traumatized in that way. So, you know, help them sort out what would be most helpful for them.
Yep.
And not to say it's not my job, but actually just explore what would be helpful here. And even, you know, I'm not sure I'm the right person to help you with this, but maybe we could find who might be, you know, always a framing it up.
Because one of the sort of thoughts that I have around this as well is that we will move through this period of time, but this period of time will still be in our systems.
Yes.
And it will re-show itself. It will emerge again through different triggers in the coaching space. And I guess that I'm saying this as a reminder, I guess, for coaches to kind of go, we might be beyond the time or the struggle, but it will still sit with people and to be present to that and to recognize that.
Yeah, I think that's right. I've sort of been talking about, you know, coaching for recovery. So that's not trauma recovery, that's not what I'm talking about, but recovery of our professional and our lives, you know, recovery of the life that we now want. Who am I now?
Yeah.
Post this pandemic? Who am I? What is it I want for my life now? And what will help me recover what I might have lost and to pick up what I might want to gain? So a sense of recovering from this collective and individual and very individualized experience, I think is also quite a helpful concept and plays into exactly what you're saying about that actually the ripples will last.
Mm.
And as we know with recovery, it doesn't happen just like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's something really sort of pulling, a thread that's pulling at me around how we take the time to do this and we are patient with ourselves as well as with our clients. You know, we can get into a habit of, you know, I get in there, I mix up with my client and they move on. But there is a sense of, well, how can I be patient with this and allow it to take the time that it needs to take?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's a really nice way of putting it. Really nice sense of being patient. And in that patience can come self-compassion and also then compassion without rescuing for the other. But I think that's a nice way of putting it, yeah.
And noticing also myself, this kind of not only might my client's identity be challenged because of a loss of work or income or the patterns, also my sense of that might be at play as well, because I, as the coach, am now living a very different life than I was, you know, 3 months ago. And with both of those things at play, if one doesn't give it the space and the time, then I guess, as you were saying earlier, we get into that entanglement. We get into buying into each other's stories.
Yeah, that's right. I think one of the survival, I talked about survival strategies, trauma survival strategies earlier. And one part of our defense system can be that our sense of ourselves becomes identified with a particular job or role. And it's a sort of survival attachment, if you like, you know, we had a survival attachment as a child because we couldn't have a healthy one. So it's a similar thing. We attach to a job or a role as an anxiety survival attachment. And of course, if that's taken away, we're then left a bit bereft from this survival habit that we had built in. And it can give rise to quite a lot of internal disturbance. But I think we can also, if we understand that, say with clients, yes, but what else of you is there? You know, yeah. Who else is there who is ready to take on this step into the new world? So we will know that that's not the only identity entity this person has, but it's a survival.
Yeah, and I guess that there may be a sense of mourning that self as well, mourning and having to kind of deal with that.
And as you mentioned earlier, this sense of lostness.
Yeah.
Who am I now? And of course, and who am I now? I don't have all the distractions that I've used for my trauma all these years.
yeah. That having to face oneself.
This lostness. So I think that's quite an understandable response to those sort of things. But it's not. But there's also a potential for growth in that.
You know, we were saying just before we started this conversation how, you know, people have found their entrepreneurial self during this time as well.
it's amazing. I mean, I live, you know, quite rurally, and I've been amazed how, you know, small shops and traders have really taken on a hugely entrepreneurial spirit to support the community, to feed the community, protect their staff. It's staggering, absolutely awe-inspiring, and sort of, you know, fills my heart, as it were, about the generosity of people to have put that energy in. It didn't come easy, but a lot of energy in to actually create this. And I think, well, how extraordinary, too, the impact that has on people who've done that.
Yeah.
And people who've volunteered for various things, who've taken on those roles, who've made big, you know, community or family commitments, and just the you meet other parts of yourself, which can be very reinforcing. And you might think, actually, I want to take more of that part of myself into my recovered self.
Yeah, I think that's a really lovely thought to sort of begin to bring this to a close, that idea of, so what are we learning now, or what has been sort of made known to us that we can bring with us as we move into the next phase, whatever that might be.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we should also see those new growths, those new points of growth, those new points of opportunity, as well as the distress and, you know, the other part of it. It's not all that, and it's not, you know, it's spread across.
We
can work with our clients in the ways that they are with it, as long as we stay firmly in our coaching.
Julia, as ever, it's been a real pleasure having this conversation with you. And I know that we could just...
For a long time.
Forever and ever. Could you just let those listening and watching know where they might be able to find you or find your work?
Sure, you can find me under... my website is juliavaughansmith.co.uk and also coachingandtrauma.com. So you can find, I put most of my coaching blogs on coachingandtrauma.com, and you'll find my book on Amazon or Open University Press, and all other booksellers, online booksellers, are available. You can find that there.
It's been a real pleasure having this conversation with you, and I look forward to our next conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Robert. Thank you.
If you'd like to watch these episodes as well as listen, you can find the video interviews on our YouTube channel and website now. Thanks for tuning in to Coaching Uncaged. Join us again for more captivating conversations, exploring the art of coaching.